The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, at 4 a.m. of Monday, the 28th of October, 1996, Michael Gallagher and Mary Attenborough were awoken by armed police in their London home. Michael was arrested and later charged and convicted for conspiring to cause explosions in connection with the Heathrow mortar attacks of 1994. Up until his conviction, Mary knew nothing of Michael's involvement, and the pair recount their story and the aftermath of Michael coming clean to Mary in a new book, which has a great title. It's called Unbroken, and both are with me now. Michael and Mary, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Good morning, Pat.
Can we go back in time, first of all, as to how you met Mary?
Well, we met in 1985 because we were both involved in local political groups in Earls Court, London, where we were living, where there was the anti-apartheid group and also there was the miners' strike in opposition to Thatcher's government attempting to close the mines. And so I met Michael and I noticed one day he was working on a crossword. And I thought he was very good at it. So I thought he might be interested in a game of Scrabble. And he said to me he loved the game. And that was the first lie he ever told me, because he'd never played it in his life.
Love stories beginning over a game of Scrabble, very unlikely. But that told you something about him, that he was a bit of a chancer.
Well, it was a bit of a chancer, but I also knew he was a bit of a wordsmith. So I suppose he is quite eloquent. And that certainly is one of his attractive features.
So what was it, Michael, then, about meeting Mary? Did you say you loved Scrabble just because you loved her?
Yeah, well, I said it to impress, I have to say, I did say it to impress. You know, it wasn't the most original line, but it so happened. I mean, I'd done the crossword previously, and this was another copy of the same, The Guardian. And I rolled it off in, 5-10 minutes.
So you'd already done it?
I'd already done it.
And you did it then on the second copy of The Guardian?
Yeah, and Mary was really impressed, you know, so I was actually...
So you are a chancer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, when you got to know each other, I mean, he would sail, even in these normal local political matters, he'd sail a little closer to the wind than you would.
Yes, well, no, I think we pretty much agreed about anti-apartheid and I don't think...
But in terms of, say, trying to get a flat for homeless people...
Oh, yes.
He would bend the facts a little?
Yes, well, Michael had been living on the streets and I knew that. And so I suppose I expected a period of adjustment, but I also knew he was a very kind person. He was putting in work to helping other recovering alcoholics, and that struck me as a very good part of his character. But he did sometimes go beyond what would be considered the legal boundaries and help people with false IDs.
And what did you think of that?
Well, eventually he told me of one occasion and he did promise me he would stop doing it. Yeah.
Now, Michael, had you ever told Mary about your sympathies for the IRA and any interest you had in Northern Ireland politics?
Actually, I did quite a lot, yeah. Yeah, it would be, you know, it was news, sure. News all the time, you know, and I did quite a lot of things to say about it to Mary. So there was no doubt where my sympathies lay, you know, but as far as Mary was concerned, it was all talk to talk.
Okay, and we know that the newspapers were full of headlines about Northern Ireland, about bombings, about hunger strikes and all the rest of it, and Thatcher's Britain was uncomfortable, shall we say.
Yeah, sure.
Now, take us to that morning, 4 a.m, Monday the 28th, when...
They just came in, we were woken by the door going in, the outside door, and next thing, all these armed police... around about our bed and dragging, you know, taking us from the bed. And we were both spread-eagled, face down on the floor. And Mary just covered by a blanket. And
you told them, hang on, I'm naked here.
Yeah, I actually was stronger than that.
Yeah, she was telling them where to go.
We were both obviously terrified. And Michael in particular was thinking, oh, geez, said subsequently about a young Irishman who was killed only 6 weeks earlier just a few miles from us by armed police. And so I think Michael was more concerned. I think that
that things might go wrong for the police.
There was a gun at my head. You see, there was a gun at my head, and I thought, and his hand was shaking.
Yeah.
And I thought of Dermot O'Neill, and I thought, you know, am I next? You know, very briefly, but then.
I mean, it's important to note that when police do an operation, no matter which police force it is, I mean, the adrenaline is pouring through their veins.
Yeah.
They're often very nervous, maybe a bit frightened. So things can go wrong.
Yeah.
And you were conscious that that might happen if you didn't do what they said.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one false move, sort of. You know, anyway, they withdrew. They put the lights on. They actually put the lights on, and the guy with the gun nearest to me, he withdrew, and I was dressed in a white forensic suit. You know, crepe. It was puckered material. And massive plastic bags in my hands and in my feet. And I was getting led away by all these people. And Mary was... Then I realised Mary was still on the floor. You know, it just came to me again. Mary's still on the floor, and I was looking about for her. And I saw her, you know, just covered in this duvet, a white duvet. And her face was just this white, you know. And I wanted to say some... Actually, I said, don't worry, Mary, we'll get it sorted out. You know, as if it was, the wrong electricity, but, you know, as if it was something minor.
Okay, and you knew that you had an involvement, but you hadn't told her.
I hadn't told her, but I really didn't think it was anything to do with that at all. You know, so as I was leaving, I actually stopped, and they all stopped behind me. And I said, don't worry, Mary, everything will be sorted out, but it sounded really shallow. And I wanted to say something endearing or affectionate. You know, I was leaving the flat, and she was on the floor. But I was inhibited. I didn't want to, you know, in front of all these big macho guys, you know. And it's a strange thing, you know, in spite of all this stuff, I was inhibited from actually, you know, showing signs of affection to Mary. So I was taken away, and that was at Cannon Row Police Station was the next stop for me. Yeah.
Okay. Now, what happened was you were ultimately charged, and you were charged with involvement in a small way with this attempted mortar bombing at Heathrow Airport.
Yeah.
At what point did you say to Mary, "Yeah, what they're saying is true. I did get involved in the rental of a lockup."
I told her 15 months later about that. About 15 months later, I told her after I'd been tried and sentenced. To 20 years imprisonment. I told her the following day.
Mary, what was your reaction when he finally... And you'd been fighting for his vindication because we had the Maguires, we had the Birmingham Six, the Guildford Four. We had all of those scandals which unfolded, the appalling vista, as Lord Denning would have it. Mm. So there was the possibility of another grave miscarriage of justice.
Yes,
so
exactly.
So when he finally said, well, actually, Mary...
Oh, well, it was devastating. It wasn't just because... He just got 20 years in jail. And so that was obviously terrible, awful. But at least I thought, well, we can appeal, we can carry on fighting, you know. And so I went in, you know, with an appeal form. And he says, no, we're not going to appeal because I actually did do it. And for a minute, I didn't even believe him because it'd been so long. And then I thought of how I could react. And also all my family and his family and our friends that had helped with the bail money. He'd actually got bail for 6 months, which is unheard of on IRA charges. And we'd raised 500,000 in sureties, of which 250,000 was necessary. There was my brother who'd actually visited him in jail, and he thought he was absolutely innocent. And they might have thought I was party to the deception. And I thought... It was too much. I thought I had to leave him. But then we had 11 years together, which we've been very happy. And obviously we were in love, you know.
But you're looking at, visiting in prison, some sort of relationship at an incredible distance and under an incredible cloud.
Yeah, I know. And that, of course, was a problem. But although on one hand I thought, am I capable of carrying on with that in those circumstances? On the other hand, to actually end it at any particular moment just seemed impossible, especially when I would have worried about him, you know, because he was in danger. Prisons aren't the safest of places, category A prison.
You seem to use your natural charm, though, Michael, to get on in prison. even with the unlikely Cray brother, for instance.
Oh, yeah, Charlie, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was, there was a visit. There was a visit to Longlaughton. This was after I'd been sentenced. I was saying goodbye to Mary, and Charlie tapped me on the shoulder, and Mary, and he went on. This was him leaving his visitor.
Now, we have to remember who the Cray twins were. They were notorious gangsters suspected of killing multiple people.
Yeah. Well, the fact is, Mary said to me, she says, "Who's that?" You know, because Mary was curious to know. Mary said to me, when they went in at first, she said, make friends, you know. So this was it. So I says, that's Charlie Cray. And she says, do all your friends have to be gangsters, notorious gangsters? And I said, well, it's the environment, Mary. If I was in a monastery, all my friends would be monks, you know. So I don't know. That didn't impress you at all, Mary, did it?
Oh, I think it did, Myrtle. I mean, yeah. A bit of humour is always good, isn't
it? So you're a bit scared, though, that something that his twin brother had said in court might have made you a potential target for Charlie.
Not so much. His twin, one of the twins came, Reggie came, and he was from here to where you're sitting, Pat. In the cells opposite in the landing in the corridor, and I ignored Reggie. I mean, Reggie was a celebrity, and he was a very talented caricaturist, and people were queuing up, you know, young prisoners queuing up to get their caricature, you know. Reggie would take them into the cell, and but I ignored him for I think it was 5 days or something he was there. And he was, and he would nod out to me, and I would just ignore him pointedly. And at the time, in a quiet moment, when Reggie left, Charlie asked me, he says, "Why weren't you having it with Reggie? What was the matter with Reggie, you know?" And I told Charlie, I said, "Look, Charlie, it's when Reggie was last at his appeal, he was very down in the IRA. His lawyer used... compared the IRA, offences and sentences with Reggie. Reggie, he'd been in 30 years at this time, you know.
And Reggie's notion was, the IRA killed far more people than I did, yeah. So why am I still here when some of the IRA fellas are out?
That's exactly it. So, and Charlie says, well, he says, Michael, you do anything to get out, you know, after they've done this time. And I took that. I thought, yeah, he's right, he's done. So Charlie was fine. He was different from the twins, and for whatever he was getting up to, he was. I mean, the thing is, prisons are very. It's a small community, and you do get on with people. You know, you generally do get on with people. You know,
it's the only way you're going to survive.
Yeah.
How long did you serve in the end?
Well, again, 6 weeks after 6 weeks after I was sentenced, it was a Good Friday Agreement was signed, and 2 years. It was like 2 years more. For prisoners, political prisoners. So that was it, you know.
Jeez, it was in total, wasn't it?
So how long in total did you actually spend?
Well, I went from October, it was actually officially October 96 when I went in, to July 2000, So that's like 3.5 years, but I was out for 6 months on bail under house arrest, and that was with Mary's brother. A relative, a cousin of ours, happened to live in London. So they put up surety. They put up quite substantial surety, you know, for the bail.
When you look back on it, were there any regrets of the small-ish part, but important part that you played in that plot to set off the mortars at Heathrow?
Regrets.
Because the damage could have been enormous. It could have been a major catastrophe.
Well, The fact is, the mortars weren't armed. The mortars weren't armed, deliberately so.
Deliberately by whom? Were they infiltrated by the security forces?
They weren't armed deliberately and for that very fact, in order to avoid casualties. And they didn't go into... They weren't fired into an area where there was people. They were fired onto the runways. So there was no... I mean...
Was this a demonstration of what the IRA was capable of, had they so chosen to do so?
Yeah, and it was actually, it coincides with the renewal of the PTA, the Preventive Terrorism Act, on that same day, the first in the Wednesday, the first mortars, it coincided with that. It was kind of lost that, and you know, the aftermath. But that was the, you know, it was to coincide with the Prevention of Terrorism Act, you know, debate in the House of Commons. You know.
Okay, but given your part in that, and it seems that having finally fessed up to Mary and therefore to everybody else that you had a part to play, you seemed prepared to do your porridge.
Yeah, I would have to, yeah, yeah.
That would, had it been 20 years or...
Yeah, well, that was a philosophy, you know. But the thing is, in retrospect, I had to tell Mary, you know, I had to say that I should have withdrawn once we went into a committed to a serious relationship. I should have withdrawn, from my activity with the IRA, you know. I should have, but having said that, you know, I didn't tell Mary and I carried on, you know, because I was already committed. I was already committed to the IRA, basically, and I don't break commitments easily.
So then you under the Good Friday Agreement, you get out much swifter than Mary had expected.
Yes.
So you're able to resume your normal relationship. What did you do with your combined lives afterwards?
Well, we'd already bought a cottage in Donegal, which was supposed to be a holiday cottage, but it turned out to be really fortuitous. We had somewhere to live, you know, and so we set up a web development business. And a couple of projects didn't go so well, but then we started one which is for small businesses with good search engine optimization. That succeeded, so we made a living. And after a while, Michael had enough time to start writing again because he'd been doing creative writing in London. And then after a while, he was writing a fictional account of this whole incident in our lives. And I think it wasn't really working because it was fictionalized. And so I offered at some point to write it as a joint memoir, and that's how we came.
What was that process like, revisiting those dark days?
I don't know. The term cathartic's been used, and you know, and it's been suggested that we should go to counselling, is that right? And it was, I mean, I appreciated Mary even more afterwards. Going back then, when I was pleading my innocence to Mary through either through letters or through visits to the prison, you know, or through phone calls, every time Mary left, you know, it was excruciating because I had to go through this pretense all the time. Mm. And Mary was saying things like, I was speaking to so-and-so, I was talking, and they're behind you, they, you know, your innocence.
How long did it take, or if ever, did it take you to rehabilitate yourself in the affections of all of those people to whom you had lied?
Keith, I mean, Mary's brother was incredibly good.
Yeah.
You know, he was, and we love him, we love Keith, You know, and it was...
I think the relationship triumphs, really, you know, that in the same way, as you say, we get on very well with my brother Keith, who's a professor of acoustics and very respectable. And at first, he was just very disappointed.
Yeah, it was just, I let him down. It was as if I'd let him down, you
But
know.
We've been on holiday together since.
And Keith,
you know,
Keith comes to Donegal and he loves Donegal. I mean, they're, you know, out and out from the Shires in England, you know.
It's an extraordinary book. It's called Unbroken, a subtitle, Secrets, Lies and Enduring Love. And even running through the chapter headings, it gives people an idea of... Please Don't Shoot is the first one. Semtex, You've Got to Be Joking. The Cavalry Arrives. The Smartly Dressed Man from Glasgow. A Judge's Tough Love. Everyone's Innocent in This Place. And loads more. It's a terrific read. It's published by Merriam Press, and its authors, joint authors, Mary Attenborough and Michael Gallagher. Thank you both very much for joining us in studio today.
Thanks very much, Pat. Thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.